The Wisconsin Film Festival screened a newly restored version of The Best Years of Our Lives last week. The 1946 film earned actor and UW-Madison graduate Frederick March an Oscar for Best Actor. March's history at UW-Madison, though, has been the subject of controversy in the last few years. In 2018, UW-Madison removed his name from a campus building after he was found to have been part of a student honor society with the name Ku Klux Klan. UW-Oshkosh followed suit in 2020. A UW investigation found the group had no known ties to the larger racist Knights of the Ku Klux Klan organization. After the name changes, prominent historians and civil rights advocates have argued removing his name was a mistake. George Gonis is a freelance journalist and public historian who says UW got this decision wrong. George, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. Good to be with you.
Before we get to the back and forth over the name removal, can you remind us, for those who didn't follow his career, who Frederick March was?
Frederick March, he's a Racine native. He graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Madison in 1920. He continued to be in touch with the university in big ways his entire life. He is considered one of the great seminal actors of the 20th century. When you talk about the actors of the 20th century, it's usually Spencer Tracy and Frederick March, both Wisconsin products. He's still the only actor in history to win two Oscars and two Tonys for Best Actor. No male actor has done that to date. Of course, you mentioned that he won the Oscar for The Best Years of Our Lives. He's also appeared, and this was no accident, in one socially conscious film after another, because that was his lifetime agenda. So The Man in the Gray Flannel Suit, 7 Days in May, two pro-Jewish anti-Nazi films before the war started, Victory, and So Ends Our Night. One of his last films was Tick, 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 with Jim Brown as an African-American sheriff in a southern small town, and Frederick March being the small town mayor. And he purposely came out of retirement to do that film because the topic was so important to him.
And you write in a piece you wrote about this whole controversy that he was an ally to the civil rights movement off the screen. Can you talk about that as well?
Very much so. In fact, it's a towering resume. He was for more than 50 years, he was one of the more public advocates on behalf of racial justice. He had a 30-year intimate close alliance with the NAACP. He was one of the founders of the Hollywood Anti-Nazi League in 1936 with Dorothy Parker and Oscar Hammerstein, two other racial justice firebrands. In 1939, seminal civil rights event, Marian Anderson, the great opera singer, contralto, African-American woman, is refused. They refused to allow her to perform in Constitution Hall. And so the NAACP starts sending out hundreds of telegrams to try to recruit noteworthy people to come out on Marian Anderson's behalf. The response to these hundreds of telegrams is pretty much, we can't get involved in anything so controversial. There are only 4 Hollywood and Broadway stars who partake in this after those hundreds of telegrams. Katharine Hepburn, Tallulah Bankhead, and Frederick March and his wife, actress Florence Eldridge. They even left. They were performing. March and his wife were performing in a anti-Nazi play on Broadway, The American Way, a play fighting anti-Semitism, and they made sure that they flew from that performance in New York to D.C. to be at Marian Anderson's concert, and they were actually, they appear as sponsors on that famous Lincoln Memorial concert that Marian Anderson gave to push back against the Daughters of the American Revolution, keeping her from performing the Constitution Hall. Frederick March was an elemental part of that. In fact, he and his wife and Marian Anderson were friends for the rest of their lives, both involved in civil rights activities and just socializing, having barbecues at each other's home.
Now, the controversy came out about Frederick March's membership in a group, I believe his senior year at UW-Madison, a group that called itself the Ku Klux Klan. What did you find when you looked into that?
Yeah, but part of the problem in this saga all along has been the name, his Frederick Marsh's name was stripped both in Madison and at UW Oshkosh before any actual research was done into the nature of that honor society and the origin of its name, let alone Frederick Marsh's actual 50-year career in civil rights. And so the name has been kind of mischaracterized and misunderstood from the beginning. I think a good way to start out might be thinking about this might be taking a lesson from the San Francisco chapter of the NAACP. A couple of years ago, in fact, this has been in the national news for over the last two or so years. There were WPA murals in a San Francisco high school that a large group of people condemned because they felt those murals celebrated racism, slavery, and genocide. But the San Francisco chapter of the NAACP said, wait a second, we need to do research here. And the NAACP took it upon itself to do that research and discovered that the artist who undertook those murals was in fact a racial justice firebrand himself. And in fact, that the murals were a critique of racism, slavery, and genocide in America. And said, absolutely, those murals, and along with one of the alums, the great actor Danny Glover, also agreed with the NAACP, those murals need to be maintained. The lesson here, how it attaches to the Frederick Marsh situation, is the NAACP in San Francisco just came out and said, you know, things aren't always what they first appear to be, which is why you need to do thorough research. And I would guess another comparison might be the swastika shape, which is, of course, since 1930s on, has been about as poisonous a symbol as you can think of. And yet for centuries through today, it's also a benign and ubiquitous symbol used by the Navajo people and many cultures in Africa and Asia. So with those two examples in mind, some of the leading progressive civil rights and Klan historians have weighed in on this. Frederick March is the name origin of this honor society. And so, and this includes people like Ray Arsenault, who's the John Hope Franklin Professor of Southern History at the University of South Florida, Stephen Whitfield of Brandeis, Robert Goldberg at the University of Utah, and maybe most importantly, Lonnie Bunch III, who's the Secretary of the Smithsonian. He's the founding executive director of the John Lewis Berth National Museum of African American History and Culture. And all of these scholars have determined that Marsh's Honor Society only very coincidentally shared a name with the terrorist hate group. That the name of Marsh's Honor Society actually predated any national awareness of the so-called, what historians call the Second Klan, aka the Invisible Empire, the group that terrorized the country later in the 1920s. And in fact, that this Honor Society was exactly what it said it was, an honor society designed to, pretty much asking each fraternity on campus to nominate its outstanding junior year campus achiever. And that's what it was. And if I may,
we just have a couple minutes left, and I want to share a statement from the Wisconsin Union this afternoon. They said March's contributions to the civil rights movement were considered when they decided to remove his name. And I'm going to quote, they say, overwhelmingly, community members and visitors expressed strong objection to naming a student performance space after any individual connected with a group bearing the name Ku Klux Klan, regardless of the group's functions or actions. They go on, they took into account that it wasn't related to that National Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. So what do you say to their response there? And we just have a minute and a half left or so.
Yeah, I would say, for one thing, that's just not how things unfolded. March's name was removed. There are two biographies written about Frederick March, which document his social justice activism. University officials at both universities told me those were never consulted at the time. They also never consulted the Frederick March papers filled with letters from Roy Wilkins, the NAACP executive director, who invited Frederick March to be the keynote speaker at the 10th anniversary celebration of Brown versus Board of Education in 1964. The Frederick March papers, just 30 yards across the street at the revered Wisconsin Historical Society, were never consulted. These dozens upon dozens of civil rights histories by Pulitzer Prize winners were never consulted. Frederick March's name is in the index in all its protagonist glory in all of those. They did not talk to people that I talked to, like Harry Belafonte, Ed Asner, who was living at the time, people who knew Frederick March, who were contemporaries of Frederick March, whose lives overlapped with Frederick March. The decision to remove March was there were only accusations, false accusations, that he was a white supremacist and a Klan member. No one making those accusations, no one responsible for removing his name, searched those books, searched the Frederick March papers, interviewed these Pulitzer Prize-winning professors who have studied the Klan, who've studied Frederick March. That never happened. So when the university produces that statement, it's not a true statement. And I guess for me, to close out perhaps, the supreme irony is that Frederick March's 50-plus year civil rights resume monumentally dwarfs that of any of the individuals responsible for both removing his name and keeping it off both theaters on both campuses.
That's George Gonis. Thanks for joining us today with us to talk about the life of actor and UW-Madison graduate Frederick March and why he says the decision to remove March's name from two UW campus buildings was a mistake.